Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of 12/11 Sports Talk featuring Cyril Gerald Quinn on this 28th of January 2016 as we discuss the world of sports and pop culture. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to Instagram at Cyril Gerald Quinn. In an abbreviated edition of the show, we'll do 45 minutes. Maybe longer, but we're scheduled for 45 minutes. And, just 10 days away, of course, from Super Bowl 50. I'm guessing teams probably will be leaving probably Sunday night. Maybe usually one team will be Sunday night, the other team more than leaves. Maybe, Monday morning. So maybe a Sunday, Monday arrival in the San Francisco, Santa Clara area for Carolina and Denver. So, but still, 10 days away. The game is still 10 days away. It doesn't start to feel real until, about Thursday of next week, Thursday, Friday of next week. It's still a long way off, but that has not stopped the talk of one Cam Newton, who wasted no time when addressing why he's such a polarizing figure in the NFL, in the world of sports, and beyond the fact that being an African American man, of course he addressed that, but he comes out and says, "Hey, I'm different," because they can't convey, they've never seen anything like me. Then who do you compare me to? Now, again, you take that and you say, how arrogant is that? But when you really think about it, what quarterback can you compare him to? 6'6", 250 pounds, at any moment, is a rushing touchdown machine. But by the way, threw 35 touchdown passes this year. And has shown that, he can beat you from the pocket. So, again, who do you compare him to? So that's just the reality of the situation. I give Cam Newton a lot of credit from the standpoint of he is making it, he's just coming out there and saying, "Hey, this is who I am. This is me. Love it or hate it." And it says a lot to go out there and be yourself. You basically said, "Hey, if I was somebody else or trying to be somebody else, you still would criticize me." And you know what? He's right. So I might as well take the criticism being who I am. Might as well. Cam Newton came a couple years ago about, what's that, 2012? Yeah, about 2012, Cam Newton came to the school that I worked at, doing the NFL 60 campaign. Namsi Asamoah was there at the time that he was playing for the Eagles, and maybe another player was there. I think those are two main players. At the time, Cam Newton, he was just coming off his first season, just coming off his first season, 2011, because he was drafted 2011. And I have to admit, he came off as, this is my world, and, you just live in it. And he came off arrogant. He came off, being all about Cam Newton. Really wasn't even hardly engaged I felt from what I saw with the kids, with the students. And, you know, walking away from that saying, like, you know, you didn't have to be here. You really didn't have to be here. But that was 4 years ago. Cam Newton now is a completely different person from the standpoint of, you know, whether or not it was a car accident, whether or not it's just maturity. He's just not that dude anymore. Now, you want to call him arrogant for some of the stuff that he does on the field. He's winning, you know, they're winning football games. I mean, his teams have been in the playoffs the last 3 years. They're 17-1 on the cusp of becoming one of just three or four, a handful of teams to ever go 18-1, joining the likes of the Buffalo, Buffalo Bills. Sorry about that, Mr. Sad. Buffalo's never had an 18-1 season. During the likes, of course, of the 84-49ers, the 85 Bears, and, of course, the 2007 Patriots, who had the 18-1 that you don't want to have, you know, being spoiled by the Giants and that, wild classic Super Bowl in the 2007 season. So he's winning football games, and there was a time when he was pulling those antics, the Superman, the taunting, when, you know, his teams would be down 30-10, or he'd be playing on a team that was 6-10, a losing team, not sticking the playoffs. And it's like, Cam, like, what are you doing? The team, you know, look at the scoreboard. The team stinks. Now he wants to do that stuff on the field. Hey, it's, you know, 17-1, you can do that. I mean, you want to call it arrogant, you can call it what you want. Winning football games. And he's doing it with a supporting cast that, you know, it's not going to make anybody forget about the, 2007 Patriots. I'll tell you that. There's no Randy Moss or Wes Welker on that team, or on the Carolina Panthers. Okay. So, you know, all you hear, again, the only thing you hear about and have heard that I've heard about the meeting this week, you know, is the antics or, you know, the rate or race and things of that nature. One of the things that I haven't heard too much about is the fact that, you know, if Carolina wins this game, Cam Newton will be only the second player in NFL history, in the history of football, to win a Heisman, national championship, Super Bowl MVP, NFL MVP. So think about that. Think about that for a second. And then join in the likes of one Marcus Allen. I mean, he's on the cusp of one of the great, from accomplishment-wise, one of the great seasons of all time. I mean, he could be MVP, 50 touchdowns, Super Bowl MVP, and a Super Bowl winner in one season. Think about the Pro Bowl. Like, nobody cares. Like, I don't care much about the Pro Bowl. First team All-Pro. But again, the focus, instead of that being the focus is on who people think he should be, and how he should act, and how he should conduct himself. You know, think about, and I will never relate to this. You know, the NFL is hard. I mean, the average career in the NFL last 3 years, you have guys dropping dead at ages 50, okay, 50 to 55. Any one hit could end your career. Concussions, the NFL, you know, treats their players like cheap labor, laborers. So, you know, if I'm Cam Newton or any other NFL player, I'm going to be who I am. And again, you can love it or you can hate it. Cam Newton has never, to my knowledge, has never gotten to anything criminal related. Never. Again, he's on the cusp of something that is extreme rarefied air. He is on the absolute cusp of superstardom. That should be the story. That should be the story. Now, I don't even want to hear the idea of the story of, in terms of, you know, the black quarterback. He's a quarterback. He just happens to be black. We went through that with Doug Williams. Four straight African-American quarterbacks have played in the Super Bowl. Two by Russell Wilson, Colin Kaepernick a couple years ago, and now Cam Newton. So this is like, you know, we've had African-American coaches. We've had two African-American coaches coaching in the same Super Bowl, Dungy and Lovie Smith. Dungy won the Super Bowl as an African-American coach. So that, like, you know, as an African-American coach, I would love Cam Newton. I mean, we'll be rooting for Cam Newton to win, for Carolina to win the game. But there's no surprise that Cam Newton is excelling as a quarterback, and it shouldn't be, you know, Well, he's a black quarterback. Yeah, he is a black quarterback. But that, like, you know, Doug Williams, again, I thought, you know, Doug Williams kind of, with what he did on that, you know, spectacular January day in 1988, kind of like shattered any, and dispelled any myth about, you know, the black quarterback and their ability to perform on the biggest stage. That was destroyed by Doug Williams. So, again, you're going to hear the stories in regards to Cam Newton about character and class and arrogance. You're going to hear those things. Those things are going to run rampant. Is this, you know, is Carolina too brash? Is this good for the game? Is this what the NFL, you know, should he be the face of the NFL? These are going to be the stories. These are going to be the stories. But, again, I respect anybody, absolutely, non-athlete who is comfortable in their own skin and who does not, who could care less about what you and I think about them, good or bad. 347-215-6180 is the call number. A lot to do on this abbreviated edition of 12 of the Sports Talk with Jason Gerald Gwynn. Remember, the call number is 347-215-6180. We'll be right back. After the 8 o'clock hour on this latest edition of 12 and Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Gwynn. Remember, you can rate and review the show always by going to itunes.apple.com and look up 12 and Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Gwynn for, again, ratings, comments, questions, even, you know, that is definitely a way to communicate with me about the show. Maybe I'll read a couple comments over there. That's certainly a possibility. Any, you know, problems you have with the show, the problems you have with what I say, we can agree to disagree, but, you know, I'll definitely would love your feedback. Again, go to itunes.apple.com and look up 1211 Sports Talk featuring Surreal Gerald Gwynn. Surreal Gerald Gwynn, as we head towards Super Bowl 50, I don't understand, you know, the NFL will try to find any way to draw attention to itself, to maximize and just to grab every penny known to man by making non-stories stories. Like, I don't understand the switch from the Roman numeral L this year to Super Bowl 50. I'm not even going to read some of the things that have been said if the NFL had left of that L. It's just because it's stupid. I'm not going to read it. They're not even worth mentioning on this program. But the NFL apparently will go back to the Roman numerals next year, assuming LI, the assumption, you know, 51. But again, just a way that the NFL, again, can make a non-story into a story, so you can just capitalize off it financially. Typical NFL, looking for every single dollar known to man. But to me, that just entire betting story. And clearly they've won because I'm talking about it. 347-215-6180 is a call number on this latest edition of 12 and Sports Talk. Peter Cyril, Gerald Quinn. As far as the NBA goes, of course, All-Star reserves were announced this evening. If you want to go back and forth with, Paul Gasol and Damian Lillard, knock yourself out. I could care less about the All-Star reserves from the standpoint of the best players are going to be there. There's always going to be somebody who is All-Star worthy, like a Paul Gasol, or a Damian Lillard who does not, who gets left off. This is how it is. I would not have called DeAndre Jordan All-Star snub. He's been okay this year. I mean, again, guys who, 30% from the free throw line, maybe not that bad, but you can't make a free throw in a big spot. So that team has been, has been about Chris Paul and Blake Griffin. And speaking of Blake Griffin, hold on, before I even get to that, I'll get to what you should care about the most in terms of the All-Star. In terms of the All-Star game, in terms of who should be there. You should care about the coaches. I felt like David Black and Luke Walton were the most deserving coaches in the first half of the season. Period. To give it to Tyrone Lue, don't tell me that you can't have David Black. Now, maybe David Black turns it down. But all I know is David Black led a team to a 30-11 record, okay? 30-11 record, number one Eastern Conference, and he would have been a coach had he not been fired based on the fact that based on two things. I mean, the Atlanta coach wouldn't have been eligible even had they had the best record, and the fact that Cleveland had the best record in the Eastern Conference. Luke Walton, again, led Golden State to a 39-4 record, and will not even get credit for the wins. Those are Steve Kerr's wins, not Luke Walton, which I don't understand how that, maybe because he's not officially the coach, the head coach, and maybe he's considered the intern, but those are Luke Walton's wins. But anyway, both Black and Luke Walton deserve to be coaching the All-Star game. Now, with Golden State, it might have been trickier because last year Steve Kerr coached, but maybe they say second straight year that Golden State can't coach it back to that year because Golden State also had the best record at their halfway point at their All-Star break last year. So maybe maybe I would have had a hard time getting that done. But David Black, for sure, should have been offered to coach the Eastern Conference. And if he chose to decline, then so be it. But by virtue of the fact that he was coaching a team that was 30-11, and he coached a team, those are his wins, he deserves a spot. Tyrone Lue, though, is going to get the spot. Very awkward position for Tyrone Lue, who got it. You think about it. You go from top assistant to coaching a team that, an all-star team, in a matter of a week. So again, very strange situation from that. We'll talk more about the LeBron and that situation with David Blatt in terms of his fire. We'll get to that a little bit later on. As far as Blake Griffin goes, this is why the Clippers are the Clippers. This type of stuff only happens to the Clippers, and it really does. I mean, you got a player fighting an equipment manager. Not another player. not even an assistant coach or a strength coach. I mean, I shouldn't say strength coach, but an assistant coach, somebody like that, in equipment management. Now, again, this is a very strange story, considering that apparently Blake Griffin was close to this guy, and they're great friends. And from what I understand, in NBA circles, it's not uncommon for guys to get close to the equipment managers in terms of, you know, staying in each other's hotel rooms or being buddy-buddy on flights and car plans, stuff like that, you know, guy stuff. But this, you know, Blake Griffin had pictures of this guy with his fiance or wife, you know, which to me is like, you know, they got so close. It was, you know, you're doing stuff off the court with this guy that was non-basketball related, like going, you know, you get that close. I mean, that was just, I don't know. I mean, I think that, I guess I don't look at an equipment manager as a coworker. Like, players are close sometimes. Some players are close. They hang out, go out to eat off the court, do stuff off the court with their families. But I just don't view it, again, the equipment. I just can't. Because maybe I'm not in that world. I'm not a NBA player or a professional athlete. So maybe I just can't view it that way. But it's very, very strange. And I feel like we're going to hear more to this story other than some teasing went bad. I mean, Blake Griffin's like, this equipment manager looks like he's about 5'8", 160 pounds. Like, Blake Griffin is 250 pounds and 6'10". How do you beat the hell out of this little dude? What did he say to basically have him to get his face punched in? And then on top of it, and this is where this is Clipper. You break, it's one thing Blake Griffin beats the hell out of the guy. He's going to break his hand on top of it. That should tell you, like, yeah, that right there, you don't need to be fighting. You can't throw a punch without breaking something. You throw a punch and it causes you to crack a hand, you break a bone in your hand. You're really not made to fight. You know, you shouldn't be fighting anybody. I mean, goodness. I just can't. Typical Clippers. I just can't, you know, typical. It's just, they are, even making the playoffs, getting to, you know, second round the last few years, they're still the Clippers. They are. They're still the Clippers. As far as David Block goes, I posted something a couple of days ago about LeBron James and posing the question, is LeBron a coach killer? You've had some guys coach LeBron, and their stay with the respective teams not in well. You had a part owner in Miami claim that LeBron tried to get exposure fired during his tenure there. So, you know, and there was some, you know, some backtracking with that, some of it, with the exposure deal. But still, we know that in the beginning, LeBron and Spoelstra, you know, we're not seeing eye to eye. We know that in Spoelstra made some mistakes, you know, putting out team business in the media. LeBron bumps the guy just because on national television. So complaining about minutes in the beginning, we still, you know, what, 26, 27 minutes, so still basically at that point in his career, you can play a lot of minutes, you know, stuff like that. But again, LeBron is Cleveland, okay? He is that franchise. Like, there's nothing – that franchise begins and ends with him. And with that power, you know, LeBron's making moves in terms of the roster. He's got guys under contract as far as with his agency, in terms of Tristan Thompson. He's got, you know, Tyronn Lue, one of his guys, though still, even despite that, still like very much respected assistant head coach during his time with Doc Rivers and his time in Boston. So it's not like, you know, he cut his teeth as the assistant coach. But he's still LeBron's guy. And we got to be sure about that. He's still LeBron's guy. So, you know, I wouldn't say LeBron is a coach killer. I'll just say that LeBron, you know, if a guy, if a coach is on fire, I don't see LeBron rushing to dump water on him. I'll put it to you that way. That's how I'll put it. Like, I don't see did LeBron go into the office, Griffin and Van Gibber, and say, hey, fire him? Probably not. When they were going to fire, when they came to the decision to fire David Black, did LeBron say, no, we should keep him? Of course he did. Of course he did. Of course not. Of course not. And all you need to know is look at LeBron's body language, look how LeBron treated David Black during his time there. You know, basically, in essence, you know, taking over huddles, no minimal communication with Black, sitting by Tyronn Lue, things of that nature. That is subliminally undermining the coach as a player when you do stuff like that. That's taking direct, indirect shots at the coach. And Cleveland, again, Cleveland and David Griffin have gone out their way to the detriment of LeBron, I feel, going out their way to make it seem as though LeBron just plays for Cleveland. They're going out their way to do this. And again, you know, LeBron's not general managing. He's not, you know, you got, like, part of the reason why LeBron's the most powerful man in team sports is the fact that you have two things. Number one is talent. Two, his business acumen. And three, you have an inferior sports culture in Cleveland. And they've been losing in all sports for years. Browns suck. Cavaliers have been bad for a while. Had a nice spell, you know, with Brad Daugherty and, you know, Brad Daugherty, Larry Nance, and Mark Price. But for the most part, Cavaliers haven't won anything. So you have Cleveland is a losing city as far as it comes to professional sports. And again, the Cavalier organization has been weak. You know, this does not happen with a culture like San Antonio. It doesn't happen with a culture what Miami has built. It doesn't happen not in Golden State. You have people in place to make decisions on personnel and coaches and things of that nature. But again, Cleveland has empowered LeBron with this, and LeBron being who he is, saying, hey, you know, this is probably part of the reason why he left Miami, because he couldn't have run roughshod over Pat Riley. He's not going to say, I don't want this. He's going to embrace it and take it for all it's worth. And in that, you get a Kevin Love instead of having Andrew Wiggins. You imagine what Andrew Wiggins would be doing right now with Cleveland. I mean, basically averaging 20 points on a terrible Minnesota team, young talent, but still they don't know how to win, and they're not very well coached. So what would Wiggins be doing in LeBron camp in year number two? At a position where it has become invaluable, having a swing man who could defend and score is, you know, there are about four of those guys that can do it at a high level. Yeah, LeBron, Durant, Butler, to a lesser extent, Durant, Butler, Paul George, you know, Batum in that next year, but that's it. Danny Green and two couple notches below. There are not too many perimeter guys that can score and defend. And he could play multiple positions and guard multiple positions. Klay Thompson would be on that list as well. So, you know, when a player has that kind of power, and again, this is historic from the standpoint of no player in the NBA has ever had that kind of power. Jordan didn't have it as great as he was. Magic didn't have it as great as he was. Kobe, none of these guys had that kind of power to where they're making personnel decisions. Now, getting coaches fired, that's one thing. We've seen star players do that before. But making personnel decisions, no. Having other players, you know, with your any other players, you know, under contract with your brand and with your, you know, with your marketing, you know, with LRMR, with his marketing company. No, it was just an agency. So it's agency. I shouldn't say marketing company, but it's agency. No, this is uncharted territory. So basically, for any athlete, I feel, in the history of team sports. So he did. With Tyrone Lue, with no Tyrone Lue, with David Blatt, Tyrone Lue, the bottom line to this, they're not beating San Antonio, and they're not beating Golden State. And that's the bottom line. They're not beating either one of those teams. 347-205-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of 1200 Swift Talk. This is Cyril Joe Quinn. When we return, we'll get more. We'll talk more NBA, and we'll also get into some unfair, some compensation, and maybe some more compensation coming in the NFL for specific groups. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of 1200 Sports Talk with Cyril Joe Quinn. We'll be right back. Number 7205-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of 1200 Sports Talk. Feature Cyril Joe Quinn. So, of course, you had San Antonio Golden State a couple nights ago, Monday night. That, you know, I was so just amped up for this game. I mean, we're going to be the game of the year. Two best teams by far. The best two records by they have the best combined win percentage of any two teams in the history of the NBA at this point in the season. And, of course, Golden State beats them by 30 points. Not going to go too crazy with that game. But the bottom, his thing that came out of that I thought about in watching that game. Number one, from a strategic standpoint, if I'm San Antonio and when they meet them in the playoffs, is you don't put Kawhi Leonard on Stephen Curry. It's a waste of a player. I mean, you can't. Like, no one can guard Stephen Curry. I mean, he's just not going to waste. I'm not wasting my best defender and the best perimeter defensive player in the NBA on a player who we can't guard. Like, I'm taking the Bill Belichick theory as far as how he uses his number one quarterbacks. I put him on the second best guy and, you know, go from there. So put Curry, put Kawhi Leonard on Klay Thompson. Going to depend on the matchup, you can put him on Draymond Green. And we'll take it from there. I mean, Steph Curry in that game, and look what he did over the past week or so against Chicago, Cleveland, teams of that nature, and San Antonio. I mean, he killed these teams. I mean, he just completely just destroyed these teams. And Curry to me is the best player in the league. But even beyond that, he's reached that level to me to where it's like he's on our team. We have him and you don't. Like, he's become that dude. Okay? He's that dude. He's on that level now. Not too many players in history get to that level to where they are that dude. Or you have them. We have them and you don't. He's at that level. Without question, he's at that level. So, again, not going to sit up here and stop on San Antonio. Tough play, of course. They've won 40 straight games. Golden State has at San Antonio at home. San Antonio, of course, has that 25 game start that starts 25-0 at home. Be looking, you know, looking forward to the next time they meet. But again, not going crazy over that particular game because not just because Tim Duncan didn't play well, but because San Antonio, you know, with the top bids, you know, playoff series can look different. Golden State, even going into that game, it's you know, the best team in the league. We knew that going into as scary San Antonio was playing. Golden State, you know, Golden State's A game is better than anybody else's A game in the whole league. Sorry, it's with it. Their A game is that. Is that much better than anybody else's in the NBA. So looking forward to the next time they meet. These two teams, again, are clearly heads and shoulders above everybody. That includes Cleveland. That includes Oklahoma City, Clippers, whoever you want to throw in there. Heads and shoulders above anybody. Everybody. Period. So, we'll see what happens with in terms of next time they play. As far as, you know, you have a lot of, you know, you have Shaquille O'Neal, you know, saw this today. Shaquille O'Neal is getting a statue in front of Staples Center. This probably, you know, will be one of, you know, about five or six statues, it seems like. I mean, Lakers already have Magic Johnson. Kobe Bryant is going to get one. Kareem, Jerry West. So, you know, it'll be one of, you know, like I said, one of four or five statues. I'm curious to know is to think that why not put Kobe and Shaq together? Why not? Why not? If you're the Lakers. You know, you won three championships. You did something no other Lakers team in history has ever done in their story history and win three straight championships in that era. Not, you know, Mike and none of those guys, you know, well, you got to go back to the Minneapolis, but I'm talking about, you know, in the last 30 or 40 years, not even Magic, and none of those teams won three straight championships. Why not put Kobe and Shaq together? But again, Shaquille O'Neal getting a statue, a little surprised they gave him a statue. He deserves it, but I thought Kobe's might be the last one for a long time. To be honest with you, I thought Kobe's might be the last one. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of 12 Hours of Sports Talk with Jarrell Quinn. We will return. Can she be stopped? No. Can he? Will he get the record? Maybe. We'll talk Australian Open when we get back on this latest edition of 12 Hours of Sports Talk. Featuring Cyril Jarrell Quinn. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this edition of 12 Hours of Sports Talk. Novak Djokovic and Serena Williams will both be in the finals, of course, in the Australian Open. Djokovic, again, has just continues to dominate just tennis in general. He's looking to title number 6 in Australia, looking for Grand Slam number 11. Really, the match against Federer was never in doubt. Jumped out two sets of love. Federer, you know, took one set and then, you know, was fighting in the fourth set. But really, you never got the sense that Federer was ever going to win that match. But anyway, Federer, and I thought, you know, I tweeted this. I thought that Federer would have a better chance against Djokovic in the semifinals versus the finals because of having less wear and tear on him going into the semis versus going, let's say, playing like a 3.5-hour match or a 4-set match against, you know, Nadal or Andy Murray, a guy like that. But that was not the case. Again, Federer just cannot beat Djokovic in a big spot, especially in a five-set match. I mean, you look at the last time, I guess the last time Federer beat Djokovic in a five-set match in a Grand Slam was 2012 at Wimbledon in the Wimbledon semifinals before he won his last, and that was his last Grand Slam win, you know, as he beat Djokovic and really beat Andy Murray in that in the finals in Wimbledon back in 2012. Federer, again, still to me clearly the second best player in the world, and really top, I think, is one major away from locking down that greatest of all time title forever, basically. I feel, I think Jordan, like, if he were to get 18, and like, he won this tournament and got 18, and Djokovic only has 10, Djokovic is not winning 7 or 8 more majors. I just don't think so. Now, if you look at it, if Djokovic wins, and he owns Andy Murray, and, you know, forget about the other guy. I just don't believe in the other player can even, you know, have a shot against Djokovic. You know, Andy Murray, who's beaten Djokovic a couple times in Grand Slams, but lifetime Djokovic is 21-9 against. We'll see what happens with that when I expect those two to meet. But if Djokovic wins this, you know, Federer will be at 17, Djokovic at 11. You can catch him. I mean, he will only be 6 behind. It's not out of realms. It's not out of realms of possibility that Djokovic could tie or even pass Federer. Now, he'll be 29 in May. You know, tennis players age quickly. You know, they age in dog years. So it's not like, you know, he only has 4 or 5 more years. He can only have two or three more years at this level. The question is, can he get, you know, 2 or 3 more years at top level? Can he get 6 or 7 or 8 majors? And the second question is, who is going to stop him, possibly? Because, you know, he owns Federer at this point in their careers. After Federer, there's a major drop-off. I mean, Nadal is in the tank right now. He can't physically might be just shot. And Andy Murray right now is not in a good place. Like, Andy Murray is not – I don't think Andy Murray wins another Grand Slam, to be honest with you. I just don't see him as a legit threat. That threat anymore. I think he's, you know, still a top 5 player, of course, but I don't think he's a legit threat to win Grand Slams anymore. So again, my question is, who stops Novak Djokovic? As far as Serena goes, it's not a case of, she's basically chasing, playing against herself, and it's just come down to a matter of, can she get to 30? It's how many she's going to end up with. She's at 22 right now, has a chance to, she's at 21, I think she has a chance to be at 22 now, and she would tie Steffi Graf in terms of, Grand Slams, second all time in terms of Grand Slams. She's only 2 shy of Margaret Court's record at 24. She's going to pass that. I would guess that she'll pass that this year. But can she be... She reached the, like, 30. That's the question you have for Serena. Can she reach that magical number? How many more years does she want to play? Again, she is so much better than the rest of the field. It's not even funny. Even at her age. That's going to wrap it up for this edition of 12 on the Swiss Office of Sports. I will see you next time. Have a great rest of the week. So long.